River on 91.9 FM. The time is 8:58 a.m. Next up, we have Fight the Empire.
Good morning. This is Bear Fygren calling from Southeast Portland, the Winter Palace in Southeast Portland with Fight the Empire. I see the battery in my phone is running low, so it's possible I may cut out in the middle of all this. But anyway, let's go on with the show. 50 House Democrats are demanding that President Biden slash Pentagon spending. The official war budget is now stands at $740 billion, but with hidden and related costs, the total could very well top $1 trillion. The lawmakers write, quote, "The United States war on terror has lasted two decades and cost the U.S. approximately $6.4 trillion. Our men and women in uniform have served bravely and honorably, yet the premise of military-centric foreign policy is a failure. We must end the forever wars, heal our veterans, and reorient towards a holistic conception of national security that centers public health, climate change, and human rights." Among the 50 are Earl Blumenauer of Portland and Suzanne Bonamici of Washington County. Missing are Democrats Peter DeFazio and Kurt Schrader. So what do we do with all this military might? As former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright once said to General Colin Powell, "What's the point of having this superb military that you're always talking about if we can't use it?" Well, sometimes we do use it directly, as in Iraq and Afghanistan. These ongoing disasters will stay with us for many, many years. We also send undercover warriors abroad on secret missions, or we hire private mercenary outfits. We also supply and train troops from client states to do our fighting for us. And we keep our, quote, superb military in readiness as a threat, like a bomb waiting to explode. Our wars go on in different guises, but it all begins with the urge to rule the world. Again, as Madeleine Albright said, quote, "If we have to use force, it is because we are America. We are the indispensable nation. We stand tall and we see further than other countries into the future, and we see the danger here to all of us." Right now, our fixation is on Russia and its President Vladimir Putin. According to President Biden, Putin has no soul, and Biden told him so right to his face. In the arena of world affairs, that's plain silly. Is Putin some kind of zombie? Also, says Biden, Putin is a killer. And he will pay the price. For what? Being a killer? No, apparently for interfering in our elections. Well, here's a little history. In 1960, President Eisenhower personally order the killing of Congo's Prime Minister Patrice Lumumba. It happened at a White House meeting, and there were witnesses. One account has a CIA station chief arriving in Leopoldville with a tube of poisoned toothpaste. But the Belgians got to Lumumba first when he tried to escape, when he escaped house arrest and fled east, where he was captured. So let's talk about that interference. The accusation that Russia hacked the Democratic National Committee in 2016 has been strongly disputed by former NSA Technical Director William Binney. The rest of it seems to belong in the area of propaganda and reporting. As Binney said in his statement that the material for the Democratic National Committee could not have been hacked because of the time frames involved, or could not, and so it had to be leaked. And so he is a former technical director of the NSA, and as far as I know, his arguments have never been successfully refuted. So but the rest of the NSA, NSA story belongs to the area of propaganda and reporting. A story may be false, but it may even be a lie, but I wouldn't call it interference. Misinformation can be fought in public. Lies can be exposed. And the Russians have even been accused of weaponizing truth, as it were. But nations have always tried to influence each other and the public at large. That's what Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty are all about. One nation's propaganda doesn't prevent another nation from fighting back. America has another way of fighting a war, its use of economic sanctions. According to one account, the U.S. has placed sanctions against 30 other countries or territories. When it works, it's a form of economic strangulation. It causes great harm without actually sending troops. The U.S. has imposed sanctions on Russia for a variety of offenses, but I find it interesting that no sanctions have been placed against Saudi Arabia or its real ruler, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. In October 2018, Arabian journalist Jamal Khashoggi entered the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, and never came out. Many people, including the CIA, believe he was killed and his body cut into pieces by a death squad sent by Mohammed bin Salman. But President Biden has decided to let bin Salman go unpunished, not even a sanction. If anybody wants to call in with comments on this state of affairs, number to call is 503-231-8187. What do you think? You think the U.S. is playing games with sanctions and punishments in the for world offenses? Give us a call. Recently, two former guests on this show have been honored. One of them was former British intelligence agent Annie Machan, MI5 whistleblower, and she won the 2021 Sam Adams Award. And the late Professor Stephen Cohen was also honored. Annie Machan served in Britain's domestic intelligence service, MA5. They recruited her as soon as she completed her studies at Cambridge University, and she worked at MI5 for 6 years during the early 1990s. When Michonne learned the agency was secretly surveilling left-wing politicians and government officials with oversight responsibility for MI5 itself, she found herself not, quote, ethically flexible enough to ignore such abuses. Meanwhile, her partner and MI5 colleague David Shaler learned that more ethically flexible agents in MI6, which is Britain's CIA, were planning to assassinate Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi, fate he was to meet many years later. Michonne and Shaler ended up blowing the whistle on these and other abuses. They resigned in 1996 and were on the run the following year, aiming to create, in Michonne's words, quote, a bit of scandal, hoping to draw attention to the substance of the abuses and prompt an inquiry. She described Shaler's fearlessness and integrity as astonishing. After 3 years on the run, hiding mostly in France, they returned to the UK, where Michonne was arrested but never charged. The powers that be, however, chose to make an example of Shaler. They threw the book at him. His whistleblowing case dragged on for 7 years, during which he did a brief stint in Belmarsh, the infamous high-security prison where Julian Assange still rots. So Ani Michonne was a guest on this show a few years back. Also, Professor Stephen Cohen, he was, who recently died, he was a guest a couple times. He is a historian, was a historian, and a specialist on Russian history. And we talked a lot on this show about, with Cohen, about Russian history and the, I don't know what they call, the one-sidedness of our dealings, our visions, our narrative concerning Vladimir Putin and Russia. So these, that's what this show tries to do. We try to bring you guests who have really something important to say. I haven't heard Annie Michonne or the late Professor Cohen on anywhere else on a radio dial, but we have had them, and the important messages they bring us here on KBOO, which is your radio station. If you would like to call in, the number to call is 503-231-8187. Every now and then I hear my phone beeping. The battery seems to be running low, so I'm not even sure if people can hear me or not. Give me a call. Let me know if you are hearing my voice. But this is Per Fogren with Fight the Empire, and we're trying to bring you the news as the news you don't hear anywhere else on the radio. President Biden has defended his decision to waive any punishment for Saudi Arabia's crown prince, claiming that acting against the Saudi royal would have been diplomatically unprecedented for the United States. He gave an ABC News interview aired recently. The president discussed this decision, and he said, we held accountable all the people in that organization, but not the crown prince, because he would have never, that I'm aware of, or we have an alliance with the country, gone to the acting head of state and punished that person that ostracized him. Kind of a convoluted statement, but that's what Biden said. Biden also overstated the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia. The United States has no treaty binding itself with Saudi Arabia, and the kingdom is not one of the Arab countries designated as a major non-NATO ally. The U.S. often refers to the kingdom as a strategic partner because of its oil production, its status as a regional counterbalance to Iran, and its counterterrorism cooperation. Well, that's something right there. I think we are kind of we depend on Saudi Arabia for our oil. Now, people will tell you that the United States is awash with oil because of our fracking, but this is, I think this is a misunderstanding of the fracking process.
We have Harry on the line.
And we have Harry on the line. Good morning, sir.
Oh, good morning. How you doing this morning? And the big story is when Biden told him he was a killer, and you know, and I thought that was a really big mistake, because what the Russians did was they recalled their ambassador. So, and the next thing will be the Russians will probably kick out our ambassador. So to let the people know that, you know, this, you know, that Biden hates Russians for some reason, and how is he supposed to get some type of a negotiation going when he's actually calling him names, you know? And also, you mentioned about what Eisenhower did. You have to remember, we believe in regime change, and we will remove anybody we don't like. Through the CIA or you know, whatever, and which means all those other countries have the right to do the same thing. And we haven't seen any political assassinations or anything like that that's happening all around the world. It hasn't come here yet, you know, but there's other countries have to realize that probably has to do it, make some type of negotiation. You also mentioned about sanctions. I mean, if you realize, when they said, I think it was 20,000 Venezuelans die every year because they can't get insulin. And that's, you know, I mean, when we do sanction, it hurts the poorest of the poor. It's not going to hurt the leaders of the country, like what Venezuela is going through, when 5 million people had to escape the country so they can live. I mean, this is causing all other problems with the states that are surrounding Venezuela, you know, so, and the people who die. Now, if you believe in sanctions, you put sanctions and a baby dies, being a Christian, well, eventually you're going to have to, you know, confront this when you die. I mean, it's murder, and they don't realize it's murder when a baby dies, and things like that. And example is the border crossing from Mexico into the United States. These unaccompanied minors, these are teenagers. Now, all these teenagers, if they were still back in their country, probably would have died. So there's the only escape mechanism. What's going on? And we have all this money, but we don't help the people, you know. So your point on the Mexican border?
Well, you know, a lot of these people are fleeing a situation that the U.S. has kind of directly contributed to, you know, like the civil wars in Guatemala and Honduras, and the invasion of Nicaragua. These are actions that the U.S. has taken against these countries, leaving Central America in a whole lot of pain and hurt. And when people flee that, while they're coming here, then we refuse to let them in. And it's really, I'd say it's unconscionable. You know, they are fleeing a situation that we have contributed to.
That is true. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thank you for calling. If anybody else has a call or observations to make, the number is 503-231-8187.
We have Marcos.
Pardon me?
Marcos is on the line.
Oh, we have Marcos on the line. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just to try to weave in some of the things that you've been talking about this morning, the Soviet Union and now Russia has historically often been used as a pretext for American policy that really has nothing to do with actually what Russia or the Soviet Union was doing. but it was a way of using Russia as a wolf at the door to justify whatever the United States, or I should say the people that are making decisions, particularly in terms of the military and the arms industry. So Russia was a convenient pretext all through the Cold War. There was a fiction that was created that the Russians were ahead of us in terms of their nuclear weapons capabilities. That goes back to Kennedy, who actually debated Nixon, saying that Nixon was weak on defense, that Kennedy was more hawkish in confronting the Soviet threat. So there was a canard, there was a fiction that we needed to catch up to the Russians, and we spent trillions and trillions of dollars since the 60s, really since the 40s, you could say, on an arms race that was completely unnecessary. It was damaging to the Russians, of course. We take credit for that. But it was also a huge waste of American resources. So right now, bringing it to the moment, Saudi Arabia is a huge arms buyer. That might be more significant in terms of our relationship with Saudi Arabia,
right,
than even oil at this point. Trump was very honest about that in terms of the Khashoggi murder. Trump actually said that our business with Saudi Arabia is more important than the death of this journalist.
You're right. Trump did have a way of spilling the truth sometimes, even though it might be very unpleasant.
We now have a nuclear weapons modernization program, which was Amy Goodman was just talking about this morning, where they're pledging a third of a trillion. That's trillion with a T, so something like $300 billion, $300 billion plus on a new weapons modernization program we're doing with England. But under Obama, we had $1 trillion. That's a trillion with a T. quote-unquote nuclear weapons modernization program to make newer, better, faster, more destabilizing nuclear weapons. That was the vision. That was the. But the point being, again, just in closing, that follow the money. The United States is the world's biggest weapons provider. We are the merchants of death. And our international policy in terms of relating nations is often predicated on simply satisfying the needs of our weapons manufacturers.
Well, thank you very much for your observations. I think they're all right on point. And I hope people out there can hear me. My phone keeps beeping. The battery seems to be running down, even though the phone has been sitting in its cradle all morning. But anyway, yes, we spend all kinds of money. I think the total war spending over the years has cost $6.4 trillion. That's a huge amount. It dwarfs anything else that the rest of the world. I think it's more than the rest of the world combined. And so. That is money that could be spent here at home. You know, you can look, the way our economy is going. It's a very strange economy we have, where Wall Street seems to be doing fine. Investors are making out like bandits, the bandits they are, but people in small towns and in the cities of the United States, you know, some are living in the streets and barely scraping by, living from one paycheck to the next, and it's a very strange economy. It's not doing as well as some of our economic voices seem to say. It's and part of that is because we throw so much money at the military, and it's basically a waste. It buys a lot of equipment. It enriches the war munitions makers, and and all the generals. I don't know how many generals and admirals there are in the Pentagon these days, and but the it doesn't do very much for for you and me and the ordinary people of the United States. It's a colossal waste. And you think of where that money could go. Think of all the things that, all the good humane programs we have around the country that are kind of scrounging for funds, while the Pentagon is sitting on this huge, huge pile of money. Once again, the total over two decades has been $6.4 trillion. That's trillion with a T, and it's just a huge misapplication of our money, and our the way we spend our money really indicates sort of our intention of how we want to contribute to the world. If you spend that much on the military, you are basically telling the world that that our goal, our main goal, is to kind of achieve hegemony over other countries, over the rest of the world. And as Madeleine Albright says, that we are supposedly the indispensable nation. Well, it turns out that, or it might turn out, that we may not be that indispensable after all. We are putting sanctions all over the place. I think there are sanctions on, what about, 20 different countries. And right now, some of these countries are really hurting because people are being denied access to food and what they need to live on. But what this will do, my prediction would be that these countries will have no other recourse but to become as self-sufficient as possible and to form alliances, economic alliances, with countries, other countries that are also on the USA bad persons list. And if enough countries do that, if enough countries become self-sufficient and or make alliances with other countries, they may we may find out that the U.S. Is not that indispensable, that the rest of the world, if they really put their minds and efforts to it, can get along without the U.S. To me, it's a real possibility, and by the time we find out, it may be too late to save the United States. If anybody else has a call, wants to call, the number is 503-231-8187. We have about 4 minutes left in this show, so this is your chance to get in a word. I really hope this is my message is coming through on the airwaves, because I'm sitting here with my phone, talking to my phone, and every now and then my phone beeps. I think it's time to get a new one. It's been sitting in the recharging all day ever since last night, but still it keeps beeping. I think it's finally running out of steam, running out of juice. So I hope that it's it'll last another 4 minutes until this show is over. But give us a call, 503-231-187. There goes another beep. But I think we should, we should ask: can the world get along without the United States? Right now, the whole world is becoming sort of heading into a an era of where growth is slowing down and halting, and we're going into a no growth economy, and nations are sort of going to have to fend for themselves. That the in some ways, I think the industrial age is kind of bumping to a halt. It's slowing down a lot. It achieves a lot of, we've spent a lot of the world's resources, used up these resources to create goods that don't last very long, that wind up in the scrap heap. And in the meantime, real needs are not being met. And so you could call this the slow fall of the industrial era. Maybe we're heading into some kind of a, I don't know what, when you think of what resources are really renewable, the only resource that does not give out, does not wear down, is sunshine, which creates, which allows us creatures to live, and it allows us to build up the soil. So we may be heading into a kind of an agricultural future, sort of after this sort of 3 or 4 century interlude of industrialism has come and gone. We may be back where we started, which is growing food in a sustainable way to feed ourselves, growing building materials, growing wood and trees and bamboo to build our homes, and using the sunshine to create a modest amount of electric power to run our equipment. And so that may be the future. And so right now it is The Future on KABU is our next show. This is your radio station, and stay tuned. This has been Fight the Empire, and my name is Pierre Fagre, and so stay tuned to KBOO, your radio station.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.